Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
Now, I am not reintroducing the idea of purgatory. But on the other hand, I do believe the baby was thrown out with the bathwater. With that came a belief, when you die, you're instantaneously and magically made perfect.
The soul of someone who dies immediately goes into eternity. There is no place where you make up for your sins. There is no purgatory. In the twinkling of an eye, we shall be changed.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Seems to be a little something missing from these lists. This is Wretched Radio. Lists and more lists. The big stories of 2021 from a Christian perspective. I've seen a number of lists, but I didn't find one in any of the countdowns that included the information that helps us to not feel like 2021 was an entire disaster, and to give us hope, and to remind us of what the really big story is of 2021. And all three of those components are intertwined. What is the biggest Christian story, the biggest church news of 2021? It's the same as it was in 2020, 1918, etc. Jesus is still building his church, and he's doing it exactly the way that he wants to, the way that he is predetermined to, and nothing is off schedule. He is running right on time. How do I know? Because the Bible tells me so, and this piece of information that will help us not feel consternated about the past year is also the information that we need to, on a daily basis, go about our business, making decisions, doing what we need to do, and going to bed at night without being in a panic or running through the day's events 1,000 times. Oh, what about this? And tomorrow it's going to do that. Let's see if we can pinpoint the bite of information that we need to have a better outlook, not just on the last year, but on the upcoming year and every single day. Jesus is building his church. And whilst you might be inclined to think, oh, he's going after Romans 13 again. No, I'm not. But I do see this in Romans 13, that governments are a minister of God. They are appointed by him. They are given limited authority by him to do his ministry work. It's fascinating that he calls them ministers of God, because obviously the church isn't, or the government isn't in the church. It's a separate realm of authority. But Paul identifies them as ministers. Why? Because they are doing the work that Jesus wants to do in order to accomplish his ends, his goals. And that means you and I can look back on 2021 and go, it is well with my soul. It's all okay. He's got this under control. He's doing what he wants to do. I might not favor it, like it. It's hard. There are so many great losses in Western civilization. It's mournful, frankly. But this is exactly what he wants. And I'm good with that. Now, let's just see if we can take that off of the calendar shelf and bring it down to the level of our lives. You have got something to do today, and you're not sure which way you should go with this or how it's going to turn out. How can you use the aforementioned information and go, phew, it's all good. It's all good, even if it turns out to be a disaster. Knowing that nothing escapes God's purview, nothing happens without God's predetermined foreknowledge, his sovereignty, ordaining every single thing that passes. We also at this moment need to remember God is good. He is able. He is faithful. God doesn't do bad things to his children. He only does that which is needed for his children so that we can grow in holiness. Happiness isn't as much of a concern of God's as holiness is. So if we take all of these bites of theological information and actually bring it into our thinking and into our lives, It might look a little something, man, like this. I need to get this assignment done for school. I don't think that I'm going to do very well with it. If I don't get at least an 87 on this, I'm going to get a C average and I am going to lose the scholarship. Okay, there's a lot at stake here. How can you approach it without feeling like woe is you? What does God call you to do? Does he call you to get an 87? No, he doesn't. God calls you to be faithful. God calls you to put your hand to the plow. Don't look back. Get the job done. Do your best. Be faithful. And leave the consequences to him. He's going to determine, he already has, what grade you're going to get. Your job is to simply be faithful. Now, let's say you do that. You give it a good college try. And whoops, you didn't get an 87. You got a 78. B-grade's my territory. I longed for 78s. You are going to lose your scholarship. Can you be sad about that? Sure. But can you be bummed out? Can you be anxious? Can you be filled with angst, as so many people are these days? Words have meanings. It is a constant refrain, especially of a particular younger generation. I'm so stressed. I'm so overwhelmed. I'm in a panic. I just don't know what I'm at my wit's end. You don't need to be anymore. You don't need to be. You need to be faithful. God's going to take care of the outcome. Knowing that he is good and able and faithful, that should allow you to rest and not be in a complete panic. God has got it. You don't. Your job is to be faithful. Trust your good and loving God, and he is going to take care of the results because they will always be what is best for you. Now, having said all that, let's dive into some of these lists, shall we? The ones that weren't of interest to me are the ones that compiled all the stories of the year, mask mandates or social distancing, churches open, closed. Those are big stories, but that is ground that we've tilled plenty here on Wretched Radio. But I did find a set of lists that has some forecasting for what's going to happen to the church in 2022. And I thought it was kind of interesting that these same people who forecast what's going to happen in the church in the next year have been doing that for years. And so when I go back and I take a look at what they've been forecasting, I got to tell you, weathermen are looking pretty sharp by comparison. They're making better predictions than we are about the future of the church. Nevertheless, this particular list that I hold in my never before nicotine stained fingers is going to cause you to go, there are four words that came to mind for me that would change this prognosticator's opinion about the future and how the church should be operating in 2022, because we all know that 2021 has been disrupted, which is, by the way, a term. Can I tell you, I'm not opposed to new words and new terms, but the disruptor thing, I'm a disruptor. I'm somebody who goes into an organization and disrupts. There's something about that word that doesn't seem to be, you know, Christian. Nevertheless, these are supposed to be the things that disrupt the church in 2022. Think about four words that might give a different perspective on this. Number one story, 2022. The demise of the old model of church. I'll just read what this person said. The old model of church has been proving less effective year by year for decades across almost all denominations and traditions. And they base that on the number of people who are no longer attending church. Average church attendance, it has been dropping really since the year 2000. The average attendance was 137 in 2000. Today it's 65. And so they're saying something's got to change here. The current approach to church not only isn't effective, it hasn't been effective for decades. Why does that maybe cause you to go, hey, you're wanting to throw out and disrupt the way we've been doing stuff because it hasn't been working? What's wrong with that? Well, in a word, pragmatism. This is doing church for our pre-desired, our pre-described, our pre-prescribed desires and goals and agendas. And it seems to have to do with attendance. Wise leaders become students of what's happening and seek to find a new approach that's biblically faithful and culturally attractive. Adept leaders will figure out where culture is going and figure out how to meet people where they're at and then lead them to where they need to be. This is the modern version of the seeker-sensitive model right here. And this is the way that far too many pastors go about the business of thinking through how are we going to do church. Quiz time. What four words leap to mind, perhaps for you, that would put the kibosh on the pragmatic model of church disrupting? Next on Wretched Radio. Don't tell me you couldn't use a little encouraging news. This is from Paul Marty. He is the executive director of the Tomorrow Club's Kids Clubs, meeting all throughout Eastern Europe to bring impoverished nations and families the gospel.
You know, most Tomorrow Clubs work in former communist communities where we find so many kids and families living hopeless lives. But with the help of the Wretched audience, we've been able to bring the gospel, hope, and long-term discipleship to thousands of kids in these forsaken communities.
Praise God for that. Would you please consider joining our effort to reach these kids and their families to strengthen local churches in Eastern Europe? $30 a month, 30 disciples. It is an outstandingly efficient gospel-centered ministries. Please prayerfully consider supporting your own Tomorrow Club, tomorrowclubs.org/wretched, tomorrowclubs.org/wretched.
90. It's New Year's resolution time. But before you make yours, I have a different type of challenge for you. How about instead of resolving to be a better person this year, you instead commit to leaving a legacy for Christ? And one surefire way you can do just that is by becoming a monthly Wretched Gospel partner. Currently, Wretched Radio and TV is seen and heard on nearly 1,000 stations combined worldwide. The second season of Road Trip to Truth has just been released with season 3 in production, solving the God puzzle on its way to 1 million copies distributed and transformed. Our latest TV series highlighting biblical counseling is set to debut later this year. We're striving to reach people all over the world with the gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ, and we're only able to do that with the support of our gospel partners. So would you prayerfully consider joining us? Just log on to wretched.org/donate to get all of the details. wretched.org/donate.
Permit me to introduce you to Bree and Salvation Domino's Preborn Style.
When one person gets saved, they have that burning desire to just make him known the same way that was made known to them. And then it's just this domino effect.
Bree currently volunteers at a preborn life center. How did she get saved? From a friend whose mother got saved at, you guessed it, a preborn life center. Why? Because preborn, it is indeed about saving babies' lives via $28 ultrasounds, but it is also sharing the gospel so that moms and dads get saved. And look at the domino effect. Would you please consider supporting preborn centers with as many free ultrasounds as you can? $28 for an ultrasound 80% of the time saves a life. Learn more at preborn.org/wretched.
Know your church fathers. Athanasius was the Bishop of Alexandria in the 4th century. He was a champion of the church's fight against Arianism and was a chief author of the Nicene Creed. However, his orthodoxy did not equal popularity. Athanasius was exiled no less than 5 times, but Athanasius chose to honor God instead of man.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Do you smell that too? This is Wretched Radio. Perhaps there's a waft in the air of a lack of confidence, a lack of belief in what Jesus Christ is doing in building his church. And we see that manifested these days with all kinds of prognosticators and people who will tell us how to do church in order to have more people come, to reach more people. That's the language, to reach more people, to change more lives. We've got to change the way we do church. Where's your confidence? It would appear that people who think that we need to become innovators, creating church to do it in a new way, have a lot of confidence in self and our ability to read the trends and to survey the culture to determine what they want when it comes to church, as opposed to having our confidence in God. There are a number of lists that are popping up this time of year that are looking back on past years to say, here's the big stories of the last year. Others are being futurists to try to give everybody a heads up on what's coming your way in 2022, especially if you're a pastor, so that you cannot lose any more people, so that your attendance doesn't go down. Do you smell something? There are four words that come to mind for me that would put an end to all of this seeker-sensitive groping. Jimmy, you've had plenty of minutes now. Have four words come to mind for you? I think that would be a no.
Jesus, 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 Jesus.
That's the right answer. Always. But regulative principle of worship.
That's good. Yeah, that too.
It just ends all of this nonsense. It just puts an end to trying to, how did we do this week? Well, how many people showed up today? What are we going to do to get them back after COVID? How's our online presence? All of that becomes secondary at best. At best. Instead, when we let God regulate how he wants to be worshiped, how he wants to build his church, we don't have to survey societies to determine how we're going to go about the business of doing worship on Sunday morning. I'd love to add to that Sunday night and Wednesday evening, but we don't do that anymore now, do we? God is the one who should determine how church is done. And all of these efforts to try to help us morph post-pandemic into what we need to be to attract people, I'll go flying by the wayside with the regulative principle of worship, that God regulates his worship. I would take you back again to the book of Exodus. Read it with this lens on. What's up with the details and the repetition about the building of the tabernacle? And the lesson that we can learn from it, and it is good to read it, not just to hear a summary of it, but to actually read it. You are left with the impression, okay, God is very specific on how he wants worship to be done. He not only gives instructions about what the priests are supposed to be doing, he gives the calendar of celebrations for the year, and he even designs the architecture. Do you think God is interested in the way that he wants to be worshiped? Yeah, the book of Exodus tells me so. Give it a read. You're going to notice this pattern. Detail, detail, detail. Make the curtains like this. Make the table like that. The bread is to be done like this. And then when it gets done, we hear that same list repeated again. Why? Because God is specific about the way that he wants to be worshiped. So now our challenge is not to survey society, but to read our Bibles and determine, how does God want to be worshiped? Does he want it to be attractive to unbelievers? Is that why he calls us to assemble as the saints? Or is it this accumulation of God's people in a condensed, powerful package of assembling to worship the true and living God? That's the question. What are we doing church for? Who are we doing church for? People or for God? Now, by the way, if you're amening all of this right now, we can get a little bit more personal with this. Church isn't done for me either. Or you. Oh, not that song again. Oh, do we have to keep doing that? Oh, I hate it. I hate it when we do that. Okay. If you've got a regulative reason to suggest we shouldn't be doing that in church, fine. But church isn't being done for us. It shouldn't be done for other people. It should be done with one person in mind. God. The end. Let me take you back to this list of the disruptive prognostications for 2022. The first one being old church has got to go. Okay. I saw we were driving. I think we were driving from Greenville to Clayton, Georgia, Highlands, North Carolina. Mountain, beautiful, beautiful country. And there was a church up on the hill. It was probably used to be a Southern Baptist church, but those appear to be dropping like flies these days. And this one literally was, this was not the slogan. This was the name of the church. And Jimmy, I'll bet you can guess what it is. What has been one of the driving seeker-sensitive slogans that people have used to describe church to attract new people? Younger people in particular. I'll get you started.
Okay.
This isn't your
mama's church.
Or your grandparents' church. Yeah. Exactly. Mm. That's it. This church was called something like Not Your Granddad's Church.
That's the name of the church.
That's the name of the church. You know, I wish I could have driven a little further down the road and seen this is your granddad's church, because granddad used to be concerned about how God viewed our worship. Ay, these trends. So the first trend is you got to lose the old church because it doesn't work. It's not effective. People aren't as excited about church anymore. Wrong, 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 wrong questions. Trend number two, supposedly coming our way. Hybrid church will simply become church. Hosting church online and in person is just how you do church to reach the next generation. No, that sentence is wrong. You can't do church online. You can show a video of a church service, but that doesn't mean you're doing church. You got to be there. This is an event, an assembling of the saints, not electronically, but face-to-face. I have to tell you, one of the most encouraging things to me about Sunday morning, I truly enjoy doing this, although sometimes I'll confess to you, it can get a little freaky. It can get a little uncomfortable. We're singing a hymn, and I'll look around and just watch people singing. It's beautiful. And you see all of these people, and you just take a look at them and judge them like you do whenever you are at the mall watching people walk by. There's a businessman, and he's singing "Turn Your Eyes Upon Jesus." Look at that old lady. I'll bet she sung this song 150 times, and she's singing it again happily. Look at that young family over there. Oh, and he's teaching his kids how to sing it. How encouraging. Now, it can get weird if you make eye contact. I'll confess, it's like somebody looks at you looking at them. What's the matter with you, creeper? I'm just getting encouraged. That's all I'm doing here. That's what happens in church. Communion. You can't say communion. There's a reason we use that word. It's with union. I'm not with you when we're online. I'm with you when I'm with you. This is the difference between listening to a CD, do we still make those, and going to a live show? Or even watching The Sound of Music on TV. It's the only musical I could think of because saw it recently at Christmas, or at least parts of it. Or going to see it, the show on Broadway. Difference, isn't there? Same thing is true with electronic church and face-to-face church. Is it true that this is becoming the new model for church? Yes. Is it true that churches should put their services online? I think so. it can benefit people, but it should not confuse or delude people into thinking that they're actually doing church, because they're not. This fellow writes, "It's good that the debate over online church will fade into the background, because then leaders can get on with the key task, reaching people however they come to you in person and online. Let's use electronic media. Let's use the internet. But let us not be confused. The assembling of the saints face to face in unison, singing praises to God, learning together as a group, being convicted and encouraged together as a local assembly of saints. That is church. Watching a video online is not." Pretty simple question. How do you suppose Jesus wants us to do church? This is Wretched Radio.
This is Wretched Radio, and I'm Jimmy Hicks. A church, a term I use loosely here, in Boston, has decided that a really neat thing for them to do would be to host an event for a gay men's chorus. The event in question is a celebration of life for a member of this gay chorus who recently passed away. And I'm not real certain if the deceased was also a member of this particular church, but that wouldn't surprise me in the least. This, quite frankly, is a very clear picture of what the world wants the church to look like. But this is not a church. This behavior mocks the church, and it mocks God. Well, the author of a controversial book, Gender Q, with the Q being the same one from LGBTQ, it's a word I just can't bring myself to say. The author of that filthy word book recently told NBC that the book is an integral part to reducing sex shaming among teenagers. If you remember, the book has been at the center of debate regarding its presence in school libraries across the country. It depicts extremely graphic illustrations of LGBTQ filth, something the author seems to think is a great idea for children to be exposed to. Parents, it's another reason that I regularly like to remind you that now is a good time to start considering homeschool for your children. Well, the woke now is apparently going after our cars, because cars are bad and they must be contained. In France, a new law is looking to reduce global warming, so the country is now forcing car advertisers to display messages encouraging walking or carpooling as an alternative. Just like the health warnings on packs of cigarettes, France is extremely serious about this because they're threatening any car dealer that doesn't comply with fines upwards of $70,000. Yeah, this is totally going to end global warming. Good job, France. And meanwhile, in Israel, scientists have successfully taught a goldfish how to drive. I guess you just never know when things are going to get so bad that you have to leave your home in such a hurry that you need your goldfish to do all the driving. I can't even think of anything clever to say about this. It's a complete waste of taxpayer money. Lawmakers in Nebraska have introduced a heartbeat bill to protect unborn babies by banning almost all abortions in the state. The bill is nearly identical to Texas's heartbeat abortion ban that went into effect in September last year. The bill currently has 20 co-sponsors in Nebraska's state Senate. Nebraska is one of 26 U.S. states listed as most likely to ban abortions completely across the board if the U.S. Supreme Court overturns Roe v. Wade later this year. More Wretched Radio is straight ahead. I'm Jimmy Hicks.
Important dates in Christian history. 312 A.D. Emperor Constantine is converted after seeing a vision of the cross. He becomes a defender and advocate of the oppressed Christians. After his death, Christianity became the official religion of the Roman Empire, which endured in some form for another 1,500 years. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Exception. There can be an exception to the aforementioned rule. This is Wretched Radio. Church is the assembling of saints face to face. Watching a service is viewing, but it's not participating. And we're called to participate in the corporate worship of God. And I would like to suggest to you, we utilize the means that are available to provide that as a benefit to people. But church is where it's at, Daddy-O. And we can't lose sight of that. I'm telling you, this trend, which appears to be moving forward unabated, we're all just going to be sitting in our jammies on Sunday morning, sipping our coffee, and watching the pastor do his thing. That ain't church. Now, having said all of that, can there be times when somebody that's as close to church as they're going to get, and we should perhaps be sensitive to those people who can't actually physically get to church? And I think the answer is yes. That's a blessing for those people to be able to view what's happening on Sunday morning. And I don't want to make you feel terrible if you happen to be housebound and you can't get to church. Utilize that blessing. Having said that, we do need to recognize, though, even so, you're still viewing church. You're not participating in church. So there's just a loss that I think can rightfully be mourned. But I don't think that just because somebody isn't able to get to church, that viewing online makes it church. What might be a solution to this? What might be a way to involve the dear saints of God who happen to be housebound at the moment in corporate worship? Hey, I know. The church could come to them. The church could go and worship with them and go do communion with those people, and even preach to those people, pray with those people. That would be the way to compensate for somebody's inability to be able to attend church physically, is that the church comes to them. And that can be a beautiful thing, I don't mind telling you. Maybe your church has a nursing home ministry. Not sure we still call them nursing. Hope care center facility, transportation. Executive privilege dwellings, whatever we call them these days. The churches that go and do church there, I'm telling you, they are blessed. It's funny because we have a tendency to think, well, if I go to a nursing home, those people are going to just be so glad to see me. And the good news is they are. But I'm telling you, you leave there having ministered to people with your presence, with your singing, perhaps reading the Bible with them, fellowshipping with them, perhaps taking communion with them. You're going to leave a changed person, a happy person, like a fulfilled person, because you're acting like the body. It's a beautiful thing. So might I suggest, if you happen to be housebound, you'd watch the service. I think it's excellent. In fact, I would encourage you to never miss it online. I would. Never miss it. But in order to really participate in the church service, I wonder if your church couldn't come to you. There's a book that I have been encouraging you to consider getting at wretched.org. It's called Safely Home by Randy Alcorn. And I don't want to give away the plot too much, but don't worry. This book is loaded with such a helpful view of church and church life. It's the story of two former roommates, an American and a Chinese man. The American man has to go to China, and he spends time with his former Chinese roommate. And he's pastoring. The Chinese man is pastoring there. And this fellow is getting a glimpse into the underground church. By the way, speaking of which, hold on. I can find this article. I think I cut down on my... Here it is right here. China just intensified their war on Christians. The president has announced that Chinese Christian churches must, quote... apparently he's into critical race theory here. Cultivate core socialist values. And punish pastors who evangelize or worship without the government's permission. Whoa. How would that change the dynamic of your meetings? Religious belief must not interfere with educational, judicial, and administrative affairs, as well as social life, said the president of China. Zoinks Scoob, demanding that church leaders proceed with what the president calls the cynicization of religion. Each faith must be interpreted according to Chinese communist ideology. It's what we're doing here in America, isn't it? Look at how trendy they are. And every religion must create a religious theory of socialism with Chinese characteristics. That's what's going on in China right now. That is, there's a reason for that. Communism demands godlessness. Socialism demands that just a few hand-selected people, preferably myself, make all of the decisions for everybody. God has got to go. He's the opiate of the people. And so this guy's making every effort to get rid of God and get rid of Christian worship. That's the context in which this book, Safely Home, is written. Now, this could wreck it for you. It's fiction. That's right. It's fiction, but it's so loaded with apologetics and theology. Let me share with you one little section from this particular booklet where the two fellows, the Chinese man who's pastoring in China, and the American visitor. "What did you think of our house church?" Quan asked as he pushed in a little wooden cart and shoveled coal into the stove. "Well, they seemed convinced that God was actually in that room." "This is understandable," Quan said, smiling, "since he was. Well, they were so passionate, so excited to be there. I never felt like that in church. Nor if I ever did, it was a long time ago, even back in college. And as a kid, when I went to church, I don't think most of us had a passion, anything like that. It makes me wonder how real my faith was." That is true. But sometimes living in a context where there is a heavy authoritative hand that hovers over the church makes assembling sweeter. There's fruit in persecution. We shouldn't go seeking it, but there are benefits to it. Back to China we go. "This is a good thing to wonder," Quan said. "Doubts about salvation can be the enemy's attack upon true believers. Yet, Xing, it's a Chinese name, says we should examine ourselves to see whether we are in the faith. I wonder if that's a Chinese name for God, and I've forgotten. "We must make sure first we are his followers before we seek assurance. The enemy seeks to accuse us if we are not what we are, but just as surely he seeks to assure us we are what we are not." I'm telling you, this is such helpful reading in such a compelling setting. That's helpful. We just did a series. We shot the series Transformed. It's going to be coming out. I think we're going to hit the deadline. We're going to hit the schedule April 1st. We're going to be releasing this to the networks. And we'll be sharing it with you. It's 13 episodes of biblical counseling. And I was just watching one particular episode where there was a fellow who was struggling with assurance. And the first thing that we did in the program was hear the fellow's testimony to make sure he's a believer. Because what you don't want to do with somebody who's lacking assurance is to just offer them assurance without knowing, in fact, that they are saved. You're not helping anybody by overlooking that. Well, that would be awkward, maybe, but it's instrumental in knowing whether or not you are giving false or true assurance. That's worth the price of admission. We need to know, because we don't want people to be persuaded, "I am good to go," and then they hear, "Depart from me, you worker of iniquity." Back to China we go. I can't imagine taking the kinds of risks they take just by meeting together. Churches in America would be a lot smaller if the cost were that great. Quan responded, "Smaller at first, eventually perhaps larger, or perhaps like in China, many more small churches, totaling many more believers. A man takes risks only for what he feels deeply about. If someone attends church without risk, he brings no passion." And I'm wondering if for these church futurists who are saying, "Oh, look at church attendance is down, therefore we need to recreate church in order to make it spanky and shiny for the unbeliever," maybe, just maybe, they should read Safely Home. That they should read Safely Home and realize, hey, wait a second, maybe the church will just take on another life. And maybe the reason that we are seeing decreased attendance at church is because there is a sense of anti-Christian sentiment now in Western civilization. And if you're going to a church where it's just a happy slappy center, you're not paying the price for that. Why would you lose your job, be doxxed, be canceled, when all you do is go see a 80s rock show? Maybe, just maybe, that is why we're losing attendance. And that sort of gleaning, it's not a bad thing. Get safely home at wretched.org, please. This is Wretched Radio.
Thank you for listening to Wretched Radio today. Well, what do the gospel, environmentalism, sexuality, agnosticism, and social Darwinism all have in common? They're among the 13 topics covered in Season 2 of Road Trip to Truth. With experts like Pastor Milton Vincent, Scott Klusendorf, Jess Arns, Dr. Jason Lyle, and Tom Hammond, among others, Season 2 of Road Trip to Truth will equip you and your kids to defend the Christian faith at school, at work, at the gas station, grocery store, and everywhere in between. Road Trip is also a perfect study to do with others in Sunday school, youth group, small groups, wherever. Just remember to grab the study guide too when picking up your copy of Season 2 of Road Trip to Truth. And it's all because of the efforts of our gospel partners that resources like Road Trip to Truth are able to be produced. Would you also prayerfully consider becoming a monthly ongoing gospel partner? Just visit wretched.org/donate to find out all the information you may ever need at becoming a gospel partner. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
Yes, you want to save money because, after all, you're a Christian and that's what we want to do, save money, but never at the expense of our family's health and peace of mind should a family member fall ill. That is why I'd like to commend you MediShare, the gold standard of healthcare sharing. You will save on average $500 per month as a family. How much will you save? It takes 2 minutes. 844-34-BIBLE. And if you think, well, this isn't very good, you get free telehealth services with MediShare, a huge network of doctors with MediShare, and great customer support. And fellow Christians will pray for you. MediShare, 400,000 members strong. Peace of mind and savings. Simply call 844-34-BIBLE, 844-34-BIBLE.
Time. It really is a precious commodity for all of us. We have to be intentional about stewarding our time wisely. And it may be that you have determined that reading a fiction book isn't being a good steward of your time. Well, if I may, not only is reading Randy Alcorn Safely Home worth your time, it is profoundly worth your time and effort to read. And look, don't just take my word for it. Todd says that this book will reorganize your Christian theology and literally enhance your walk. With Safely Home, not only will you find a remarkable story, but you're also going to find a thorough gospel presentation, perfect for believers and non-believers alike. So pick up your copy of Randy Alcorn's Safely Home right now at the Wretched Store. Just log on to wretched.org. That's wretched.org. And see for yourself that reading fiction doesn't have to be a waste of time. It can actually be a blessing to you. Wretched.org.
Books of the Bible. The book of Joshua tells of the conquest and division of the Promised Land. There are two consistent themes in Joshua: God's faithfulness and his aversion to unfaithfulness. When you wonder how committed God is to his people, or doubt the seriousness of idolatry, let Joshua remind you that your God is a jealous God. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Let's stay in China for a moment, shall we? This is a Wretched Radio. The crackdown continues in China. Our Christian brothers and sisters increasingly feeling a totalitarian hand trying to shut down Christian churches or cause them to conform their theology and doctrine to communism. That doesn't work because the two are incompatible. Even so, they are trying to make it harder and harder for Christians to thrive in the communist country of China. But I also read an article. This is from CDN? No, that's not it. Daniel Greenfield. www.feminismdestroys.org. Headline, Can Feminism Destroy China? Well, that's an interesting question. What's going on with feminism in China? It looks like there's an increasing acceptance of what we would say would be Western civilization, probably second wave. Yeah, I would say second wave feminism. Remember, first wave feminism, it goes back really into the end of the 19th century. It was about one issue and one issue only, and that was women's right to vote. It's all they cared about. Sexual issues, abortion, all of gender things, that just wasn't even pondered back then. This was about the right to vote. But then we see a second wave. Really, I think Margaret Sanger from Planned Parenthood most certainly helped. She, I think, was maybe one of the first of the second waivers. But then you've got Betty Friedan, Gloria Steinem. And the second wave was an effort to try to separate the reproductive act with reproduction. That there would be no consequence that you would experience from doing the procreative act. That was the purpose of the second wave. And I wonder if that isn't the second wave that is going on right now in China. Just to remind ourselves, the third wave is our current wave of feminism, which is separating our gender from ourselves. That, of course, would be the big gender debate that is going on. But that is a part of the feminist ideology also. And that's what makes it third wave feminism. Can feminism destroy China? There are babies not being born in China for a couple of reasons. Of course, you used to have the one child policy. They upped it to two. Now I think you can have three kids in China. Why? Well, they wouldn't probably interpret it this way, but China's recognizing, you know, the balance of blues and pinks. We seem to have made a hash of it. Isn't it fascinating that in cultures, you typically see like 49.8% females and 50.2% males or vice versa. But it's astonishingly close. Isn't that, you know, lucky that it works out that way? Well, in China, because of the one-child policy, because of the attitude toward women in a godless culture, and because of issues like dowries, and because of issues like hard labor, it was deemed more beneficial to have boys than girls. Remember, it is the women that always suffer underneath a non-Christian regime or worldview, I should say. And so it is. There's 40 million babies that are short on the feminine side. 40 million baby deficit. Female. Oof. Millions of men who can't marry. Domestic social instability. The bride's family demanding tens of thousands from prospective grooms. And so people aren't getting married. But there was the reason that this article asked the question, can feminism destroy China? Is because more and more women in China are going, you know, not interested. I'll just go to work. I'll have my own career. I'll have my own thing. I'll do my own thing. And so families are becoming weakened. They are non-existent like they once were. And babies aren't being born. And this fellow's asking the question, could this be the demise of China? And I think the answer to it is it could be a part of it. But I think we need more wicked ideologies than just that. If you take America was a strong nation ideologically, patriotically, we viewed positively the impact of this country on the world. We were strong, and look at how far it has fallen, and look at how the morals and the values are changing. Look at how morality is deemed fuddy-duddy, and we've got to get rid of it and progress and be on the right side of history. So we've got gender issues, we've got marriage issues, we've got family issues, we've got adoption issues. We've got feminism issues. We got woke issues. We've got political issues. All of these things, including postmodernism, mixed into the mess. In fact, postmodernism, frankly, might be the glue that holds the glop together. It's all of those things that have conspired to help devolve our society. So will feminism alone take down China? I doubt it. It might help. Incidentally, marriage licenses have fallen to a 13-year low and the birth rate has hit a 43-year low. That is the sign of a death of a nation. And by the way, America is not far behind it. China's 1.3 birth rate is actually worse than America's or Europe's. Oof-da. And unlike America, births and population is going up, but it's mostly from immigration. We're not replacing ourselves. That's the sign of a fall of a nation. Will China crumble because of a feminist attitude? Probably not. It could help. Not that I'm cheering it on. I'm just saying it could help. And speaking of adoption, that's right. I did bring it up. The Pope has decided to speak out on adoption. I love if you're gonna smell the irony from these words from this single man without children. But he did a pretty fine job of making you feel horrible if you're a pet owner. If you've got dogs or cats, okay, if you have cats, you probably should be ashamed. But if you have dogs, the Pope says, shame on you. Instead, you should be adopting children. There's so much about this to just not jump for joy over. First of all, as is always the case, whether it's Catholic, Protestant, evangelical, whatever the stripe of Christianity it is, and even outside of Christianity, that's such a reckless statement. Now, this is, by the way, this is a jurisdictional realm issue. Now, I know we're talking about the context of the Catholic Church, but the Pope has now injected himself into the family, specifically into the bedroom. That is not an ecclesiastical authority's role. That jurisdiction is limited. Now, that pastor or whomever can preach about the beauty of having children, the delights of a full quiver. They absolutely can do that. Why we have kids, what the beauty and blessing is, why it is doing something that has a much more far-reaching and long-lasting impact than doing really just about anything else. Do that because you're preaching the word, but pastors shouldn't be going into the home to say, this is how many kids you should be having, and you should get rid of your animals because you should be having humans instead. Because his jurisdiction is limited. Similarly, dad can't go into the church and say, hey, pastor, this is what you need to be doing. Now, can he be on the board? Can he be working? Yeah, absolutely. But his authority is limited. The Pope, overstepping his jurisdictional authority, issuing a reckless statement. There's so many. I mean, how's about the people who can't have kids and they've got pets and they're a blessing to them? How's about the warning that, hey, not every family is cut out for adoption. Not every husband and wife can handle adoption issues. Make sure you deal with that thoroughly, getting a conviction, a commitment from your local church to support you until the child leaves the home. This was just reckless. Furthermore, Mr. Pope, sir, how many kids have you had or adopted? None. This is yet another problem, besides the fact it's not biblical, with the celibacy system of the Roman Catholic Church. Today we see a form of selfishness. I'm translating this for you. We see that some people do not want to have a child. Sometimes they have one and that's it, but they have dogs and cats that take the place of children. He urged any couple that can't have children to adopt, pointing to Joseph, the foster father of Jesus, as an example of the highest forms of love that people can attain. Francis, have you attained that level of love? Oh, you haven't. Oh. He writes or said, it's a risk. Yes, having a child is always a risk, either naturally or by adoption, but it's riskier not to have them. That just isn't the way to approach the subject. Especially when you're the kettle trying to call the pot black. If you got pets, enjoy them. They're blessings. Delight in those little animals that are running around your house. Make a decision between husband and wife, whether to have children, adopt children, Do it prayerfully. Do it thoughtfully. Do it biblically. Don't be afraid of the future unnecessarily, because children are indeed a blessing. But we shouldn't be making a law where there is no law. Until tomorrow, go serve your king.